Now on PG Podcast Network, it's time for the year-round carnival with Vince Accardi and your host, Racetrack Rolfe.
G'day, thanks for checking out Year-Round Carnival. Each and every Monday, Vince Accardi and I from Daily Sectionals have a bit of a look at what happened over the weekend, and over the weekend, not much happened. Sydney was washed out. Be fair to say, there was no Group 1 racing in Ipswich, so we didn't do a preview podcast. They'll return this week for one more time with Tatsiara Day. But in the meantime, just want to talk about a couple of broader issues, man. We'll touch on Flemington, of course, with Vince. Good morning, mate.
Good morning, Ralph. Yes, well, Randwick being kiboshed, they made a good move, of course, because there's no real money at stake, but they made a good move. You know the story. Starts raining, the track's finished.
Exactly. It's a mess.
This is it. And so they definitely made a good decision from that point of view.
Yeah, for sure. So we raced at Flemington. We'll have a bit of a quick look at that as well. But I just thought I'll bring up a broader point from Flemington. I never tell you what I'm talking about, do I?
No, you don't.
As we go, which is always good. So your race speed profiles, you only had one race that you put as high confidence at Flemington. Obviously, it's an off-season. We've got a couple of members' questions about that. But the high confidence race was the sixth. Most advantage, Munimek, Sabah, King of the Castle, Windthorn. Munimek, been out racing since November 23, and I'm reading from your race speed profiles, but racing well, winning his latest, best of the day, 0.7 above benchmark at Swan Hill, which of course was their cup. Boasts a dynamic IVR profile between 1400 and 1600, remaining at the mile he is ideal with his latest Frankie's current mark. Put the writing on the wall, two starts back at Caulfield, who is still racing in good order, deep into his campaign off of moderate 14.5 below benchmark first section to close with a booming 9 length above benchmark combined last 400. His latest run was more genuine speed, 5.8 lengths below benchmark first section for 7.9 length mid-race squeeze, raise his pace to the mid, 2.3, close strongly with 3.9 above last 400. To this stage, there's no indication he's begun to train off, but the mounting will be vital for confirmation. With a tick from the parade, he can repeat here, make him a key player once again. Vince, the reason I read all that was because you didn't mention one bit that every other form guide would mention. He carried 61.5 kilos, and that's why he was $7.50, and even better in some places. Why don't you mention weight? And this is a bit of a fundamental thing because I've been working with you for over a decade now, but you are still the only form service, and we'll call your race speed profiles a form service, we'll call our review a form service, that doesn't mention weight carried. Why?
Yeah, actually, that's a good point, Ralphie. Like, why don't I? I mean, I don't ever really talk about it in the race speed profiles ever.
Ever.
Yeah, so why don't I do it? I'm just thinking about that now. No, the reality is this, Ralphie. I did away with weights more than a decade ago, just threw them in the bin. Not because I'm being mean or I'm, a smarty pants or anything like that. The reality is this. With the fundamentals of sectional times, you cannot use the weights and then add or subtract by doing that and then forcing yourself to bring in a class table or even just saying, okay, we have a rudimentary, anything over 52 or 55 kilos, this is how you can apply a weight strategy to it. It's just something that does not work. Now, mind you, from a structural point of view, I did examine all these things to see what happens because pretty much firstly, when you look at speed and all the type of speed figures that have been around for more than three decades, they've always had a component of weight mixed into it as part of the overall arching figure and, of course, the class. But what I found was the minute I applied a weight to it, what it was doing was making the figures very inconsistent, and you couldn't get down to the art of knowing what the real purpose of sectional times is. See, people want to use sectional times like as another instrument, like a rating, which is fine, but it's a far deeper process than that. You need to use sectional times to understand the actual true performance of a horse, which has nothing to do with the weight, because the weight allotted is what I should say, because the horse is already carrying a weight. And when you're clocking a horse and you come up with the sectional breakdown the way we do it, well, the weight's already considered. you know, whether it's 60 kilos plus the horse's weight of 500 kilos, so 560, it's already considered in the figures because this is what it's done. So if it doesn't perform and it's got a higher weight, well, then you can see it doesn't handle it, right? If that's how you want to look at it without adding or subtracting. But more
important. So just on that point, I'll just interrupt for one sec because the weight carried, including the horse's weight, is even something that no one says. And I get a flashback from the mid-noughties, say about 2005, 2006. Shane Crawford was one of the first midfielders to start genuinely losing weight in AFL footy, and because they realised that all of a sudden they had to go from running 15 to 18 kilometres a game, and it was easier for them if they were lighter. Now, they were super fit anyway, so they just changed the way they did gym weights. But they realised they were carrying their own body weight, which was part of it. And this is what you're saying, that when people say, oh, this horse goes up 3 kilos from 55 to 58. No, and let's just pick a rough number. It goes from 557 kilos to 560. Does 3 kilos out of 560 really make that much difference?
Yeah, well, so this is the thing. So the art of studying weights, which I've done in a very, very deep way, one of the things that I learned about the art of weights, and I know because I never talk about it, people may think or may feel that I don't maybe have the knowledge, but I have a really deep knowledge of weight. There is a threshold, and if you study it carefully, you'll see many horses do have a threshold issue about when they carry a certain weight. But what can't be understood, when I did all the research, and this is years and years ago, more than 20 years ago, the challenges that you're faced with, because when you do the work and you find out, okay, this horse might have this threshold, if they carry more than 55 kilos, they don't seem to succeed, or they have a dullness in their performance. And even then I was using times to give me some sort of indicator. What you couldn't do is to frank that was the horse injured? Where was the horse in its fitness? Did it have a clean run? Was it on the right part of track? So all of a sudden, you cannot validate the weight. It's like saying that, okay, if I'm going to take this to a court and I'm going to prove beyond doubt that this was the reason why the horse didn't perform, you actually can't. You cannot prove beyond doubt that's the reason why the horse didn't perform.
Whereas you can
absolutely
you can prove beyond doubt a horse ran this fast between this section and that section.
This is it, right? And then you can also find out if they were in the wrong bright part of the track or the wrong part of the track, or they de-accelerate the wrong time, they weren't fit enough, or they can't carry the distance. So these are all the things that the weight cannot tell you. And the emphasis is so high everywhere about weight, like it's just locked into their brain. Now, it could be an easy escape for trainers. Oh, yeah, he's got to go 4 kilos more, that's why. Okay, maybe. That's why. But maybe not.
Yep.
So what about the other side? And from a form student point of view, and of course, one of the reasons why I ended up going on the Sky on a Friday and all that is I personally, other than what we do, Ralph, and I'm being very humble here, the ability for people to communicate sectional times in its proper art form is non-existent by a lot of the race people that are in the industry that are communicating to the broader punters, recreational punters. It's not communicated correctly. They may just make these fleeting comments, oh, best last 200 of the day, or best this, or best that. That's it. It's not enough.
It's context.
No. Why? Why did it do that? See, this is helping the person, right? Why? And this is why one of the things that when we do the race speed profiles, it's very clear when the crew come together. Rule number one, we do not talk about weight. We do not talk about class. Everything has to be emphasized around the performance of the horse. And you and I, we've been doing these podcasts for that long, which it just doesn't, we don't talk about it because there's no need to talk about it. This will just make it more confusing and you cannot validate what's been said. You know, okay, he's gone up 61 up. Okay, what's that going to do? What's it going to do? This is a pre-race. Oh, we can't win. He's got 61 up. Why? Why? How long was it between wins?
Well, It was third in this case. And I just and look, I know people could say cherry pick, but I think it's just a great example with Muttermac. His last win was 13 days earlier. He carried 61 kilos. So, and then, of course, you look at the whole race and you think, well, it wasn't like he was bumping into a superstar. It was winter racing. And he was carrying half a kilo more. Was that really going to make a huge difference?
No, Ralphie, and this is the reality. Of course, the higher the weight, if there's, you know, very wet tracks, it can change your acceleration.
Yep.
Particularly if you're blocked for a run. That can dull it if you get severely checked. But that can dull it even if you got 55, Ralphie, or 51. It still can dull it. You get one check. I've seen horses 53 kilos get a check. They're done.
That's it.
It comes now down to the actual thoroughbred itself. Might be a sook, a little bit of a whack, doesn't want to go there anymore. This is what happens, right? What about the riding areas? How do we measure that?
So then the extended argument is the gravitational side of things, that, you know, the longer the race, then the more weight comes into it. And I heard Lizzie Jelfs, who's fantastic, she used it because it's an old truism, so to speak, in racing. I just had Channel 7 on a couple of weeks ago and she mentions that. And so, well, it really kicks in over the longer trip. So I'll take a breath and I think, okay, pretty famous. The most famous race, staying race in Australia is obviously the Melbourne Cup. 2 years in a row, very elegant, and Gold Trip were unquestionably the best horses in the race. Now, you could have made an argument whether it will run the distance, handle wet tracks, dry tracks, blah, blah, blah. But and you were keen on both. Both of them were over $20. And I confidently say the reason was because they had high very elegant was top weight if you allow for the mare allowance, and Gold Trip was top weight. And you had a fantastic price, as you did with Muttermac on Saturday. I just looked up on Betfair as much as $8.70. So totally different class of race. One's a mile, one's 2 miles, one's a group one. But the fundamental remained, you end up with tremendous value at times, ignoring it.
Yeah, well, it's not because you want to ignore it because of the weight. It's just,
yeah,
it's not enough. See, all the years that I practiced the weights and the handicaps, I never could get confident. And if you can't be confident, you can't bet correctly. You can't bet consistently. Because you can't have confidence, and you cannot get confident with ratings, which, you know, especially when they're weight bearing. You can't, and people say, but now we've worked out how to blend speed into it. Okay, I'm still, you know, this is still something that's interesting. Now, when we talk about what you just said about more weight and distance, well, okay, again, see, this is the things that I was faced with and thought about often. 20 years ago, about these things that we're talking about right now. And then I used to ask myself, okay, well, what happens if they run fast? Is that going to be a bigger impact than if they run slow? Does that mean now the horse handles it? Now, what about all the hurdlers that carry giant weight? No, this is what I used to think. Because exactly. In the early days, I used to clock all the hurdle runners, right? And the reason why I didn't clock them anymore so much in the future is because they were never a betting opportunity, right? And just a waste of energy, even though it would have been some value as an example for a trainer or something like that. But because it's so limited in terms of what they do, but they all carried 68 kilos, 16. I used to see horses break 11 seconds with 68 kilos.
Yeah.
So does that mean they can't handle it? How do you break 11 seconds with 68 kilos? How? Run slow.
Well, and it gets back to the core, actually, of with horse trainers, that they're in the clock tower, they've got a stopwatch on, they don't know how much the track rider's carrying, they don't know if it's they'll know if it was a big saddle or a small saddle, but it's generally track work saddles, and they don't take weight into account when they clock horses at their track gallops, and then they obsess about it in a race.
Some may be very intelligent there and make it a bit heavier because they can get to fitness quicker.
That's it, exactly.
Build muscular strength, potentially, but at the same time run the risk of injury. So this is one of the challenges, right, when you now start having the manipulation of weight for training, because that's another whole art form within itself. How do you use the weight to assist your horse in getting ready for racing? And a lot of the times, this is firstly one of the reasons why they don't even bother about saying, okay, you're a jockey and I want you to carry, because a lot of the times the horses, when they're trained, they don't even have jockeys in the sense that are racing, you know, like riding. They have other
track work riders.
Yeah, they have track work riders, and they're all in the 60s and 70s, right?
Yep.
And they depending on who they've got available to them or that, or sometimes they put additional weight on the horse, is they may use it as a tool to advance their fitness levels, but that would be mooted around the horse's capability of not getting injured, or if it's just going to be very slow pace work. So it's a whole different technique and strategy. Race day, I always come back down to the fundamentals. It's been, because it's been talked about for over 100 plus years, about weight stops trains. I used to have it embedded in my head, weight stop trains, right? Yeah, this is what they used to say, and I would believe it, just like everybody else. Trainers, they all got used to that. Oh, you know, like, you see, you're the trainer, Ralphie. Your horse runs ninth. You had a level of confidence before the race. Look, it's going to run well today, but just not sure about how we're going to handle the weight. If the horse does it, probably, yeah, it just didn't end well today, very well. It's good. I'm not want to just bluntly say it's an excuse, because sometimes there are legitimate reasons why they didn't perform. But it's an easy one to say, yeah, just can't handle the 60 kilos or the 59, but we need to run it. There's nowhere else to go. So we've got to run, or we've got to put the claiming three on. Now, how many times has it been said the horse claims three and it gets the 58? Oh, we shouldn't have had the apprentice on it. But we can't have the senior rider on it, right? Because it's going to carry 3 kilos more. It's going to be devastating.
Actually happened on Saturday, because Celine Gaudrey was meant to ride it. She couldn't. I think she was sick on the day or something. So they couldn't find another apprentice. So they put Billy Egan on.
He's a master of carrying weight.
What's that?
He's a master of carrying weight.
Exactly. So they put Billy Egan on, and that's why the horse drifted. It was part of the reason why the horse drifted, because they couldn't claim.
This is incredible. You know, like, again, I find it all incredible. And so what was their rationale after the event when the horse wins? Like, what do they say? Because, I was just oblivious to all this. So what did they say? They all say, unbelievable.
He probably just ran to what he's been doing, because, like, as I said, at worst, he's carrying 0.5 of a kilo more. So,
well, do they just stop saying things, Ralphie? What do they do? Do they say anything after the event about the 61?
Well, they don't stop talking about it. That's right, because if it wins, because it's amazing. But
do they say that's a history record making thing? What do they say?
I'd flicked off by that.
Do they say, maybe it's overrated weight?
Yeah, they never say that. There's one point they never say.
They wouldn't have a job anymore, right?
Let me ask you another one. Tim, one of our members, of course, we ask give our members an opportunity to ask us questions each week. So he asked this last week. I said, I'm going to park that, because I knew this was coming up. Not really an applicable question. So, in other words, it's broad. But does Vince ever – do you only back horses on Saturdays and in the main capital cities only? So, in other words, are you just Saturday focused with your work when it comes to having a bet?
Okay. Racing and betting. It's a crazy one. I've punted everywhere. And if you spoke to me 20 years ago, I said, mate, provincials, fantastic place to bet. Anywhere. Doesn't matter. Even Northern Territory. I used to even bet there. It didn't matter. So in the broader scheme of things, everywhere I like to have punted, didn't matter, regardless. But in more recent years, why I've streamlined myself to Saturdays with first and foremost, and this is something you and I do, Ralphie, is we do Melbourne, Sydney. You do a lot of, like, you do a lot of work for Sydney as well, even though you may not, you know, go as deep maybe on certain form things, but you do all the reviews with the sizzlers. And so for Sydney, so you're still, even though you might not get to the micro level, you are diving deep and pulling apart a Saturday. And you obviously do more with Victoria during the week and things like that, I would assume. And for me, I like Melbourne and Sydney Saturday Metro, And, of course, I like to have a look at, in more recent times, we've put a person in the last couple of years that focuses on Queensland, so we get a pretty broader view, because I felt that when I was doing work in Queensland just for the carnival time, that there could be ongoing possibilities. Now, I'm not sure whether that's actually materialised as well as what I thought a couple of years later. It's hard to say, because we've had a lot of, you know, weather that throws you off many times. And then I do Western Australia on a Saturday when there's carnival time mainly, and sometimes South Australia. And the reason why I do this is, myself as an individual, I learnt a few things about me. Number one, I do not have the capability to be very sharp mentally to do form 4 or 5 days a week. And it might sound silly for some people. I don't have it. Now, I'm like very intense, and I just don't have that capacity with all the work that I do. Now, I don't no longer work 100 hours, 110 hours a week. I probably do about 80. That's probably where I am at today.
What are you doing?
I have tapered. You know, this is true. I have tapered, and I can't even say to you why I've tapered. Right? Maybe the tools are more sophisticated. I don't know. Maybe other people are taking more work off me. Well, I don't know. But I do a little bit less, so maybe I could go back to it. But I found that mentally, I couldn't stay sharp enough to do the work, and I definitely found major mental issues when I used to bet during the week and I have a non-performing day, because I've got all this other body of work that I need to do, and I found myself in a terrible place, like psychologically, about how I was struggling. You know, I'm not saying you have a mental breakdown, but I was struggling to keep it together because I couldn't cope. I couldn't cope with how I was trying to deal with all my emotions. How'd this horse lose? Why? And then you want to find out, you know, like all the reasons why you want to attack it. And it impacts you, right? And then at the same time, you've got all these meetings that you have to time and all these adjustments that you have to do. Very difficult. And then if I had a winning day, I would have the reverse problem. I would be that high on a kite, as you want to call it, right? High from the stimulation of victory and having a whole whack of money in your bank account, right? That you felt like, you know what? I'm the king. I'm not working today. I'm having a day off too. Because you can justify in your brain, this is what I was doing. I was justifying in my brain, oh, yeah, I can have 2 days off. I deserve it. But hang on a second. I have 2 days off. And then if I want to do another midweek meeting, because I'm still running high from a great day, I might cut a corner or two. Just, you know, one of those things, because you've got a little bit less time because you've had a couple of days off. And then all the work's pooling up. And you can't catch up to your work. You can't stay on top of it. And then by the time you get to a Saturday, you start to be down. You're mentally down because you have not been able to work. I'm like starting at 5 o'clock in the morning, 4:45, going to bed sometimes midnight, 1 o'clock, exhausted mentally, and saying, this is terrible. And this is what I was happening to me when I was winning or losing during the week. Then the other part that I found, because I always want to know why I lost, I found a lot of horses during the week, they get a block or a check or a little bit of inefficiency from the rider, they can't overcome that adversity. And it might, in often would be the difference. See, back then, all those years ago, I wasn't a place predominant punter. I would be backing one runner, two runners, three runners sometimes in a race for a win and setting up a book to get an outcome and a result. And that many of the times the horses weren't winning because they were, realistically, they were probably -3, -8 benchmark horses below standard. And what I found is these horses, if they're overreached, they, you know, puncher, If they're not ready, they puncture. If they get a bad ride in terms of inefficiency of rider for energy distribution, in other words, over attack a certain section of a race to put himself in a winning position, they can't overcome it. So I found that a lot of the horses were not performing because they just didn't have the ability to rise to the occasions. And I was finding the very opposite thing happening on a Saturday, that horses that were benchmark, plus two, plus three, plus one, they could often cope with one or two, you know, inefficiencies in running and still be able to get victory. So this is the whole, you know, the long story about why I streamline myself to a Saturday. So by me streamlining to myself for a Saturday, which I've been doing for more than 8 years now, probably more like nine, I found I'm sharp. I only got to do two meetings. I'm a lot more in check with my personal side of my emotions, been able to handle that because I've got to control that. It's its own beast. We're humans. We're not robots. So that needs to be kept in check. I can be in check. I'm working with a lot of horses that, generally speaking, are borderline benchmark or higher, which is fantastic. They have a different preparation in terms of where they are fitness-wise. They also have a very, very different structure in terms of the riders. And the most important thing of all is you never have a problem getting your money on. Now, during the week, you will. You will have major, like $50, of course you can get it on. Get $5,000 or $10,000 on it. It will be very different discussion.
Well, liquidity is not there. Exactly.
It's hard.
Yeah.
They're not going to set you for what you want, and therefore you all of a sudden may have to pay double the price to get on. These are the rude things that happen, right?
Yep.
And then does that make you a good business or a good operator or a bad operator? Little things, right? But Saturdays, there's plenty of money around. Generally speaking, it's not an issue. I'm not so sure about the winter time and, you know, some of these races, but I tend to taper off at this sort of time of the year, like we get past Queensland, I taper. I actually do the work, but I don't bet or anything like that during the period of July. Usually I don't get near them, but I just keep on top of the game. And yep, early August, I'm ready. Let's go.
So Darren's asked a question, one of our great supporters here, and it's an extension of what Tim wrote. And there's, I do extensive form Saturday Metro, subscribe to Rapro Database, Metro RSPs, Pod, Sizzlers, Metro. However, this calendar year I found doing Saturday form lacking the usual quality of data and horse profiles. There are less races, it seems, with above benchmark runners, and the data is more compressed. This has been evident to my eye in Autumn Vic, Sydney, and Sydney, as well as the SA Carnival, Queensland Carnival. I finished my body of form work and feel underwhelmed with the lack of profile runners that present in supposedly high-quality races. I know it's a broader intuitive observation, but with nuance, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. So I suppose overview, Vince, do you feel the Saturday grades, and this, of course, is via the IVR work that you do, declining?
Well, here's the thing. Number one, firstly, we used to only have eight races on a Saturday. Then they went to nine. And more broadly these days, with the occasional exception in Victoria, we're 10 races.
Yep.
Even in other jurisdictions like Western Australia now, it's consistently nine. Maybe not so much 10, but it's consistently nine. Sydney's now always 10 on a Saturday, sometimes 11, right?
Yep.
And this and big fields, just the way they've restructured their classes and their gradings, big fields, and getting the wider net coming in, so you're getting a lot more provincial horses coming in. And there's never a lot of shooting stars out of that, right? So you are seeing a lot more of this creep in of horses not as capable in their performance. And we are definitely for the fact of, yeah, they've got their own guidelines they've got to meet. If they're going to have 10 races, they don't want to have four or five horse fields like they do in a lot of races in Europe, right, particularly in the UK. This is why everything's $1.30, $1.40. One of the worst places to bet in some cases is because when there's a four or five horse field, no one's going to give you any value for anything, right?
Yep.
But this is what happens when you – and they don't even have a lot of racing there anymore in terms of number of races, but they run on a number of tracks on a Saturday there. And here we have this situation. The 10 races has definitely diluted. And then we've also had a lot of scenarios with the tracks. This impacts performance of horses, because a lot of horses may be genuinely, and you see it, Ralphie, in the numbers, they perform best when it's dry, and they don't have that very often. And by the time they might get it, who knows where they are in their campaign. They could be done, and therefore a dry surface appears and it's too late. This is one of the challenges. Another challenge is there's a lot more trainers keeping their horses up a lot longer. Have a look at how many freshens up there are now. And this is all about the art form of them. Okay, there's a few reasons. A trainer might say, we're keeping it up injury-free. Fantastic. It helps kick you over. But most importantly of all, we're getting our $5,000-$6,000 every month in our account.
Training horse.
Yeah, oh, yeah, 100%. You know, this is, and all the vets, they're all clapping their hands. All the racing bodies, they're clapping their hands. This is all the riders, they're clapping their hands because there's a huge pool to choose from. And the owners, well, maybe they're clapping their hands, right, if they've got a good one. But this is what is changing. Like, look at Mudamek, for instance, right? Let's have a good look at Mudamek. This is perfect. Had its first race start of 126 days, which is a nice break, Ralphie. November. What a month are we in?
Derby Day.
Yeah, yeah. What month are we in now? We're in winter. Really? Now, this horse, of course, it ended up being where it was, is because so many of those horses in that field were bad. Yeah. Bad. You know, no good. And when I say no good, please understand, they're horses that can win races. But from my proper understanding, this is Mudabek is a horse that's capable of running plus three, Ralphie. Right? The majority of these horses can't go one length below benchmark. Right? They can't do that.
So he can keep winning races being below that, well below that plus three range. He's now benchmark plus one range.
Yeah, and they keep him up all this time. So if they've got him injury free, all these things, they can probably get away with it, right? And this is one of the reasons to help answer Darren's question is when you take a proper look at this. Australia has a challenge, Ralphie, and it's going to come soon. And, well, I don't know how soon, because I've always been stunned by how fast bodies move, right? They move very slowly. There's too much racing, too many tracks. There's too many tracks, unsustainable, professional from a business point of view. It's extremely – if you were running racing – you will be culling a lot of tracks because they're all loss makers. Even when they hold some of these meetings, they're all losing money. They're not making money. I once got told, why is there all these meetings in – because I was blown away, like how many picnic meetings there are in Queensland, for instance, and how many – you know, this is not – or well, I should say non-TAB meetings, particularly on a Saturday. It's probably one of the biggest. And the direct answer I got, and correctly, by the way, is – there's that many horses getting bred that if they didn't have all these races on, where would you sell them? What would you do with all these horses? See, let's come back to the art form of business. Is it not a business? Or am I just a tripper and dreaming about some other crappy thing that, oh, yeah, we're going to breed all these horses for nothing? They're not breeding them to take them to the knackery. They're breeding them so someone can buy them so they can race to make money, even though they would – well, they don't know. They genuinely don't know for the majority of the time about, like, how capable they may or may not be.
Yeah, but, and if you look at a yearling catalogue, what does it say? The dams had, you know, 8 foals and 7 of them have been winners. Well, if any of them have been any good, doesn't matter. You put on lots of races, they're gonna, it's going to find lots of winners, aren't they? Yeah.
So this is what happens by having – a lot of races, this allows the breeding to continue and flourish in a very solid way. And I have no doubt that's fantastic from a business point of view. It's brilliant. It is also fantastic in the sense that it keeps a lot of people employed. It does a lot of great things. It does do a lot of great things for the industry. But if you're looking at the overarching part of business and saying how profitable is it? Oh, it'd be just that he's carrying all the losses. It's like when I used to be in distribution years and years and years ago in my young days, and we'd say, what are we going to do? The price has fallen by this. The areas where we were having profitability, we'd have the profit bucket, right? So what we do is we transfer a whole bunch of money out of that and put it in the losing bucket, right, to level out the books and say this is how we can reduce the price by taking the profits away from that, and we recalibrate the books, right, to then show like this is how we can get it out the door and not make it a loss. But it is a loss, right, if you do it in isolation, but I guess overall it's not. So probably from an overall scheme, the racing bodies are making money overall, but they're carrying a lot of losses and they could make a lot more money. But maybe their charter still is about let's keep racing on. But what they're finding increasingly difficult is this. Number one, if we look at Australia and the value of land, because a lot of these tracks are on Crown land, they need to be replaced with something that can make a lot more money, right? Because a lot of these tracks, they race on 5, 6, 8 times a year. And the safety, let's talk about it. Let's talk about Victoria.
Well, it's going to happen in Sandown. And just the mathematical reality is they're going to sell it because that's how much money they can make out of a real estate play.
Oh, yeah. And but let's just go, how often do they race at Werribee now? Hardly ever. How often do they race at Kilmore? Hardly ever. They used to be, staple tracks, right?
Yeah.
They're not anymore. It's just not, right? Why? Because I shouldn't say unsafe, because they do have it safe for racing, right? But the amount of effort that's required to make it good to go, they've got to pray to God or whatever they want to pray to that it's not going to be a deluge of rain race day. Well, look at this. Randwick, one of the greatest tracks on the planet, which is brilliant for handling water. Get water during race day when it's wet and you're in the worst place on earth. Right, so imagine other tracks, what that's like. So, Ralphie, this is all part of what we're dealing with now. One of the things that I'm researching at the moment and working on is really trying to understand this scaling process they're using with the point systems that they give, you know, sliding horses up and down on points, which qualifies you, doesn't qualify you. How effective is really that? Where are the real benefits and disadvantages of that? And how is this impacting the type of races that get set up? So this is where we're at. And now coming the full circle, me as an individual, I operate about 40 weeks of the year from a betting point of view. It's roughly 40 weeks, Ralphie.
Yep.
And we're lucky. We are lucky because we have some fantastic racing in Western Australia. We have some fantastic racing in Queensland. We have some fantastic racing in South Australia. Even though they're sporadic, the reality is we do have them. And we've got our 52 weeks of the year, Melbourne, Sydney, right?
Yep.
Metro. And, yes, you have a look at Sydney. I mean, 2 weeks ago, what was there, like 200 horses? Are you kidding me? I mean, they would have been giggling to say, look how many horses have nominated. Look how many horses have paid up. It is unbelievable. But where are all the – when I look through their numbers, they're all like, goodness me, they'll be battling to win a race at Goulburn.
Which underlines the patience game you've got to play. Look, we will leave it there. We've got one more go at Brisbane. So this week I've just looked at the radar. Going to have a fair fight. Tats the Arrow Day. Be a terrific meeting, and we can't wait to dive into it with you on Friday. And if you want to get that preview podcast, follow my website, racetrackralphie.com.au. Click through the links for the preview podcast. Of course, all of Insicardi's daily sectionals, Race Speed Profile subscribers have an audio-only top-up option there, and we look forward to bringing you all that, and we'll talk next week. What we'll do for our Group 1 members, we always like giving them a bonus. Was going to put it up here, but given we went a bit long, we'll make that the bonus podcast. We'll just have a look at a couple of really promising runners at Flemington on Saturday, including Craig and the Black Cloud. We'll just get Vince's overview there, but you've got to be a Group 1 member to do so. Go through my website and click through the links to become a supporter, because we are not here unless we have the support of our members, which we do. We really appreciate it. We have no corporate bookmaker affiliations. We are completely independent and ad-free. Thanks so much for listening to Year Round Carnival.